What's up, Houdat Nation, and welcome to the Dome Patrol United Saints Podcast. What's up, Houdat Nation, and thanks for joining us on the Dome Patrol United Podcast Network. I'm your host, Jeff, and I'm not drunk. I just landed from Florida. Whew, what a weekend it was in Jacksonville, I will tell you. But I wasn't there. They all picked Green Bay, including Scott, if I'm not mistaken. They all ignored the fact that Sean Payton is the quarterback whisperer, including Scott, all offseason. They all hoped Jameis would fail miserably, including Scott. And even the day after the game, most of the talking heads, including Scott, still claim this was not a Saints victory as much as a Green Bay coming out flat kind of a game. Except for a few rational-minded figureheads who are capable of independent thought.
Like Scott.
Right on cue. There's so much to unpack this week's show. We're going to get started. Put your seatbelts on, keep your hands and legs inside your earbuds at all times, and enjoy the show. Jason, welcome to the show. What's your number?
About 1.5. Just had a couple beers tonight.
Is that a Miller, huh?
It is. This will be the last one of the night.
That's a classic right there.
It is. Going old school.
That's nice. Jason and I, when we were lifeguards, we used to, you know, the big inflatable boats? We would fill that with ice and beer and let it float around the pool during the nighttime swim lifeguard parties. And...
How many people drowned?
None, because we were lifeguards.
Not a single soul lost.
You almost got me. Right. All right. Scott, welcome to the show. What's your number?
I do not have a number either. I just got home from picking up my daughter from dance class, but I am eating some cookie cake, so I might have a sugar buzz in a few minutes.
Was that from Schlotzky's?
No, this is from my son's five-year-old birthday party that was over the weekend.
Oh, damn, I missed it.
He turns 5 tomorrow, so happy birthday, bud.
All right. All right, Gunn, welcome to the show. What's your number?
Got it.
Let me clear my throat, man. Right. Hold on. I'm good.
Yeah, I thought you ate. I thought you did edibles.
I do. I do that. I do that all too. Right.
Good. In addition to. Welcome to the show. And then Wes, welcome. We won't ask you number, Gunn. Wes, what's your number? Welcome to the show.
I'm just having my first drink. I actually just got home from my son's first football game of the season. And then we had dinner because tomorrow is his 14th birthday. So me and Scott's kid have the same birthday.
Oh, all that. How about that? All right. Instant reaction show. First of the year was off the rails from what I hear. But we are going to get a little bit deeper into it with great cheer and this week's game recap.
I tried to rhyme.
I think you mean off the hook, not off the rails. Off the hook.
I think it probably went off the rails.
It was great.
Right. It was beautiful. In a good way. Off the rails is not a bad thing.
Scott was just shocked about the victory.
It is off. Off the rails is a bad thing. It's like a train going off the rails is not a good thing.
Record prediction.
But it was a happy train.
It was what's that train? I think I can.
Little engine that could.
There it is. All right. So let's talk a little bit more about the game now that cooler heads have had a couple of days to prevail. Gunn.
Super Bowl. Oh, yeah. We're going to Super Bowl, by the way. That was my instant reaction.
There are no cooler heads.
I mean, when does it become okay to say that we're going to the Super Bowl? Are you not allowed to say that after week one?
You can say it after the NFC Championship game.
I recall as a Saints fan growing up, walking out of the Superdome after any victory, a lot of fans be yelling, Super Bowl.
That's correct. I was conditioned.
I think anytime you win.
That's right.
Anytime you win like that.
I mean, Jason was calling it on the refugee show after he left Afghanistan that we were going to win the Super Bowl. Hurricane evacuation show. that we were going to win the Super Bowl. He finished the show declaring that this was our year.
I did.
Might have been too early. But maybe he was right.
I knew. I just knew.
So this was a dominating performance. I mentioned in the intro that the talking heads, a lot of them were still kind of saying, this is more about Green Bay wasn't prepared or Green Bay came out flat. Do you buy into how much, like what percent of this game was either Green Bay's injuries that they had to deal with or Green Bay not being prepared for what the Saints were ready to serve them?
I say 2% that and 98% Saints. Like we were the more prepared team. And you can say all that bullshit about they had injuries and this and that. Look, we went through a freaking hurricane. We evacuated to Dallas. We practiced, you know, they're displaced. Their families are with them. They don't know. A lot of them still don't know probably how their homes are because they haven't been home. And we're dealing with all that kind of adversity. And we chose to rise up.
I'm glad it killed out on you because I think you were about to say rise up, and we don't say that on this podcast.
That's probably why it killed on me. Right?
Thank you, universe.
Uh-huh. It knew. We were able to load up.
I've watched the game 1.5 more times, and this was a Saints victory, not a Green Bay loss. And if we want to talk about comparing injuries and all, we lost Eric McCoy on the first series of the game when it was 0-0. He might be the best center in the league. If he's not one, I mean, he's one of the best centers. He's going to get paid as the best center in the league sometime really soon. Our number one and number two receivers did not play. Our number one cornerback missed a series. I mean two series, you know, at the start of the second half when the game was still, I mean, a two-score game, which could have gone either way. We've got a rookie cornerback who we as a team did not intend on being a starter at cornerback this year that ended up playing and shadowing maybe the best receiver in football, one of the two or three best receivers in football. So if they want to talk about, like, who had injuries and who had problems, you know, we lost Trey Hendrickson this offseason. What were we supposed to do with it? I'm just kidding. All the stuff, adversity, as Scott said, that's just the players on the field. Green Bay planned on traveling for this game. We did not. There was a lot of things. And Green Bay, at least until a couple days before the game, stayed at home. The Saints haven't been home in almost a month now. What we went through and then what we put together, they were out-coached. They were outplayed. It looked like the Saints worked harder through the preseason as far as, like, being in shape. And Green Bay, before halftime, they made a comment about it on the broadcast, was lots of hands on their hips. They were worn the hell out.
And you can't tell me that's the heat as much as
no.
It is just not being in shape.
Agreed. I'm sorry. The heat. Well, at some point, they're professional athletes.
There's a difference between a team that does training camp in Wisconsin and a team that does training camp in Metairie. And that's why I'm glad that we don't do training camp in Wisconsin anymore, because they're a cold weather team. Aaron Rodgers' records was shitty down there. They don't do well when they go to Florida. That's part of the reason why Peyton chose it in the first place. That fed into it. Put them in the dark unis because we're the home team. We get to choose. And, I mean, that was part of the game plan.
What was time of possession, especially in the first half? Didn't the Saints have the ball for...
Yeah, the first quarter, we had it for pretty much the whole quarter.
I think it's 17 minutes in the first quarter.
Well, there's only 15 minutes in the first quarter, so I'm going to have to check the math.
Right. You know, I was looking at that.
That's how much the Saints had it. Time at one was
point,
created.
At one point, it was like 7.5 minutes to 21 minutes. Like, it was right up until the end of the half. Like, it was really, right. Really embarrassing.
I think the final stats was the time of possession was actually closer than you would think. Closer, yes. I went back and looked at a lot of the game stats, and a lot of the stats – if you just looked at the stats, you would have thought that this was a close game.
34 minutes to 25 minutes.
Yeah, it's pretty strong.
But the second half was pretty even. Like, we basically had a 10-minute lead at halftime.
It is interesting. We did run the ball for a lot, but, you know, there weren't, like, a ton of big plays, a lot of solid plays. I mean, like, a couple of touchdowns were short. The fourth and seven play, I don't know that we talked about that on the show the other night, but – the balls, fourth and fucking seven to throw it to Juwan Johnson.
He had three catches, two touchdowns, and a fourth and seven. I mean, that's
best tight end in the league.
Just and again, it just came down to, like, we were prepared for that game. We were not going to lose that game.
I agree.
Well, and then we're hearing that from the team after the game, too. Like, this was, like, a lot of players that aren't necessarily from New Orleans, haven't been in New Orleans a long time, have clearly like gotten into the culture of New Orleans and are talking a lot about the type of fans that we have in New Orleans and what the state of Louisiana is going through. And it, again, these guys are professional athletes that are coached up, but none of it sounded like talking points that they were just like words I got to say. They really sounded like they are wanting to do things, you know, to lift up the state of Louisiana and the area around New Orleans.
The I was talking about those game stats. You know, if you look, we ran 60 plays, they ran 52. So not a huge difference there. We both had 9 total drives. So that was the same. Let's see what else there was. Yards per play, we had 5.4. They had 4.4. So, you know, like I said, if you looked at the stat, the biggest stat is obviously the turnovers. You know, with Rodgers with 3 turnovers, or the Packers with 3 turnovers, Rodgers had 2 interceptions. He only had 5 all of last year. That just shows how well prepared the defense was. One thing that I didn't want to say that I didn't mention on the instant reaction that I kind of thought about later was, and listen, before I say this, because I know what kind of response I'm going to get, major props to Jameis Winston for this game. Like, he came out, he was prepared, he did what he was supposed to do, and he won the game.
Waiting for that butt?
There's no butt for him. I'm leaving that alone.
So I have a butt.
Give me that donkey butt and them big old legs. I ain't too hard to beg. Ain't no shame in this game. I'm going to break it down and beg like Jane. Please. 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 Let me ride that donkey, donkey. Let me ride that donkey, donkey.
Go ahead.
I think that there were a little too many balls that I felt were thrown high. And even the announcers made a comment that Jameis Winston will, if he's going to throw off, he throws off high. And that it may become, that could become a liability later on, could contribute to some potential interceptions. But nobody's going to be as accurate as Drew. And that was an adjustment I had to make in my own head. Like that Kamara amazing feat of like where he had to like go back, like bend his body to catch the ball and then turn around and still get the first down. Phenomenal athletic play by Kamara. Shouldn't have had to bend like that to catch that ball, you know.
Agreed,
and but Jameis looked like they went up for the ball.
Agreed, but Jameis used to be famous for throwing high over the middle of the field. He threw high out of bounds, whether it was the back of the end zone or to the sideline.
That's good. I mean,
and to be fair, he did not float a ball over the middle that just went over a linebacker to a safety.
Okay, so maybe
his high passes would have gone out of bounds, whether it was the end zone or the sideline. All of his high passes would have been that way.
And maybe that's coaching. It may be somebody, you know.
Hey, the plays we watch, you go back and watch the game again with him working through his progressions was, I've never seen Jameis Winston highlights where even his great highlights that looked anything like that.
Definitely. And like I said, he had a great game. But what I want to say is I have to give props to Taysom Hill because he lost the starting quarterback job, something he prepared for all offseason. And he stepped back into that quote unquote Taysom role where he belongs and did what he needed to do. He didn't want, he didn't complain. He stepped right back into that role and had some key plays for us. And that's all. That's all I'm going to say. He stepped back in that role and did a good job.
Oh, you didn't know? Your ass better call somebody.
All right, now we're going to interject real quick. We got a new guest joining the show today, Max, also known as Darth Saint. Welcome to the show. I understand, Max, that you, well, first of all, I see you're drinking. Do you have a number on the drunk scale rating?
This is number one, man. It's the woman's birthday today, so we're just having some wine right now.
And I'm happy that she's allowing you to be on the show for a few minutes and share your experience. Because you were at the game, right?
I was at the game.
All right, so I want to get a firsthand experience of what it was like to attend a Saints home game in Jacksonville, Florida.
Honestly, it was a great experience. We got to the stadium about 45 minutes before kickoff. The line, you know, it was a pretty long line, but it was mainly Packers fans. You know, we walked in and I was expecting to see more Saints fans than there were, but it seems like the Saints fans were hanging out at the bars in the area.
Oh, that's why.
So okay. They were late arriving. So
typical home game.
It started to even up as the game started, but I think the Packers fans went straight into the stadium while we were kind of tailgating elsewhere. So we grabbed some drinks, you know, weren't really in a hurry to get to the seats, given that you're going to be sitting under the sun for a few hours. And from the previous road games I've been to, like Miami in 2006 or 2009, it was miserable sitting out in the sun. So this time we wanted to pace ourselves a little bit, just make sure we took as much time as possible before getting to seats. We got there about, you know, 10, 15 minutes before kickoff. We were in our seats. Great group of Saints fans around us, man. We had we were fourth row on about the 10-yard line on the Saints sideline. And I would say our section was about 90% Saints fans. Nice. And the funny thing was, most of them weren't from New Orleans. You know, there was a couple sitting in front of us. They were from Boston. And I asked the guy, I was like, look, you know, how did you become a Saints fan? He's like, man, in 2006, I was watching the Monday Night Football game. Gleason blocked the punt. That was it. I was like, man, this is fucking awesome. So he was getting into it too, man. Dude was probably, he said he was, just like a freshman in high school when that game aired. So he was, what, mid to late 20s at this point. And he was getting into it, man. Like he was the first one standing up, flipping off the Packers fans.
Them young dogs out there, right?
Yeah, man. Honestly, all in all, it was an amazing experience. Obviously, as the game progressed and the Saints were doing really well, you know, we got louder. The Packers fans got quieter. And it was a good time, man. Everyone had a great time. You know, we were all – no one was staying in their seats by the second half. It was just kind of like a concert where everyone's kind of blending together.
Awesome.
You know,
that's great.
Worried about who's sitting where.
That because there were enough empty seats to where people were just kind of it was
there weren't enough empty seats. It's just that everyone was so relaxed and laid back and at ease with one another. You know, we were just having a good time.
It was just a party. Yeah,
it was just a party. It was a very, very much a party atmosphere. I would say a top five Saints game I've ever been to.
Oh, wow.
And I would probably slot it at number five. You know,
I got to hear the top four now. I can't ask that question.
The reopening of the Superdome in 2006, the Super Bowl, the NFC Championship game, and honestly, probably the Dolphins game in Miami in 2009 than this one. Because that game was...
The air breeze dunk.
Man. Yeah.
It was fun. Jeff and I were up there. Yeah, that was fun.
We were in that Miami game.
Yeah, man. All in all, it was an amazing experience. I think the stadium's first rate. I love outdoor stadiums.
Well, it's got that new stadium feeling because it hasn't really been used much,
right?
From what I understand, right? All the seats are clean.
Yeah. Well, the coolest thing was we had this group of Jaguars season ticket holders sitting behind us, and they were rowdy, man. And I was talking to them. I'm like, why did y'all decide to come to this game? They're like, well, we just wanted to watch two good football teams play.
And they only got one.
Cool, man. They had their own chant that apparently they do during the Jaguars games. And they were doing this chant throughout the game, man. I wish I could replicate it. I wanted to record it, but we ended up, you know, having too many drinks.
The Duval, what's the thing? Is that the thing?
So it's got to be great to watch all. You know, road games are fun just because outdoor stadiums we're so not used to it. But getting to watch all the Packer fans there, just watching that game unfold, you know,
it was awesome.
So yeah. You said you were on the Saints side, right? You were behind the Saints.
Yeah.
So Alex Barbie, longtime listener, first time caller, he tweeted in that he was at the game as well, and he sat on the Saints side, and he mentioned how the sun. Is like Jacksonville designed it so that the home team gets the shade on those afternoon games. So the visiting team fans and the visiting team is just getting beaten down by the sun the whole time.
And that is 150% accurate. You know, I can tell you from being on the visitor's sideline in the Dolphins game in 2009, I thought it was going to die. Like it was the hottest experience I think I've ever had at a game. And, you know, we all grew up in Louisiana, and it's hot as fuck here.
Yeah.
And being on the visitor's sideline, because I think every stadium is set up that way, to where the home team on the side against the shade. If you're on that opposite side, it's brutal. So the second half started in this game, and our side was completely shaded. You know, there was a nice little breeze. Yeah. We didn't have to wear sunglasses anymore. And you're looking over to the other side, and you're just – I mean, you know those guys were melting.
They got their hands on their hips there. Like the
players. Now, man, hands on their hips, like Aikman said.
Right. So that's pretty awesome. And then was it the full Saints home game audio video experience? I know Mike Haas did a tweet there before the game. And
yeah, they honestly, other than having the sun on you and not feeling any air conditioning, it felt like a Saints home game.
Wow. Okay.
There you know, the music was the same. Whenever we scored a touchdown, they went through the usual playlist.
Did they play halftime?
Yeah, they did. They did.
Even you can't get rid of it. Can't get rid of it. Even with
they need to retire it. But
I agree.
But it is what it is. They played it. I think they only played it once. But they went through your typical New Orleans playlist, and they
second
hit all
nine.
The favorites. Yeah. So, but it was great, man. They did a great job. Everyone super hospitable. You know, I don't think you could find anyone who had less than a stellar experience in that stadium. Now, obviously, winning went a long way towards helping that.
But. Yeah, yeah. Well, so speaking of that, so where were you? Like, were you on the side of the field there where Deontay Harris caught his big deal?
No, we were on the other side.
Oh,
yeah. But
was it that kind of like, oh my God, we haven't seen something like this since.
Right. So we were on the side where James, and it was funny because I was texting with a buddy of mine, Jason Scott, know him, Nick, and he was, you know, bitching about how James had like 96 yards, I think, passing at this point. So I turned to the guy next to me. I'm like, man, I really need a deep shot to Deontay Harris here. And then two or three plays later, I see Winston rear back, and you can just see it unfold. It was like, it's like when you play Madden and you have that camera view to where it's a little bit lower. And you just see the ball, the arc go up, and we just knew it was Deontay at that point. So
yeah, and then that just reminds me of how the word on the street was Jameis telling the receivers all spring, like, "Don't you slow down on me this year? Like,
right, man.
Don't make me look bad."
I had to tell y'all after the draft a year ago what was going on with Jameis, man. Y'all still telling me about Taysom, but
Scott was.
I've been all in on some Jameis since we got him.
So, all right. Yeah. Anything else about the game? Oh, so, well, you know what? This would have been a look at him tweets, but I'm going to bring it up for part of the game anyway. We'll just kind of blend it all in. Mr. Coach Klein would like to know that about Callaway. Is this a product of him going against the number one corner or not what we hoped? Like, what's up with Callaway and his lack of production for this game?
I mean, in my opinion, I just think the game plan wasn't focused around the receivers as much. You know, it seemed like Peyton wanted to if you remember back to Drew Brees' first couple of games with the Saints in 06, he wasn't setting the world on fire in the passing game. You know, it was a very balanced attack. Mm-hmm. And I think Peyton wanted to do the same thing with Jameis. You know, let's establish the running game. Let's lean on the offensive line. You know, Juwan Johnson was fantastic. Troutman, I was disappointed in, but Deontay, when he got his chance for the deep shot, you know, he made it happen. I think Callaway, I think next week and the week after, you're going to see him get a lot more involved. You know, that wasn't a mirage we saw in the preseason. You know, right. The dude had two circus catches in the second preseason game, and he was rock solid in the first one. Like, I personally think he's going to be extremely productive this year. I just think it was a product of the game plan.
And look, I mean, Jameis only had 148 yards passing.
Right.
I mean, you know, obviously the plan was to go in and run the ball. And he had 5 touchdowns, but those were all short. I mean, with the exception of the Deontay Harris pass, those were all red zone touchdowns. Mm-hmm. So, yeah,
and you know, it was the most atypical Jameis Winston game I've ever seen. And Scott, you know this. I've been watching him since he was a freshman at college at Florida State. He takes deep shots. You know, the dude isn't out here dinking and dunking. And to me, it was very encouraging to see him make the right decision 90% of the time. There was that one pass that would have been an interception had it not been roughing the passer. That was his to me, was the one real bad decision I saw. Now, granted, my view, you know, from where we were, I couldn't see as well as you guys could watching it on TV. But that decision, that was, you know, 2019 Jameis. It was a bad decision.
To be fair on that pass, that's a pass that when you see the defender's full name tag, you throw that ball at them because they can't defend it without committing to pass interference. Right. And the defender did commit pass interference on that play.
But they called, but they didn't call the passer.
Right. I'm saying they didn't call the pass interference.
They didn't call the pass interference.
On the replay, I mean, so that's one of those that if you see the linebacker safety running away from you, you do – it's kind of like a trigger, throw the ball because
to be completely honest, like, you know, from where we were sitting, he threw the ball, I think, to about the 15 yard line, and that was the yard line right by us. Yeah. So from our view, we're looking at the receiver running, I guess, towards us.
Yeah, yeah.
So I couldn't see if the positioning or not, but just from where the pass landed, you know, and then thank God they called the roughing the passer. Thank God.
Agreed on the Troutman thing. Him, the two drops by him were concerning for sure. Like we had him wide open on the two balls that he dropped.
Yeah, you know, I had a discussion with a buddy of mine on Twitter, and we were talking about, you know, Troutman's performance, and this is going to probably sound, I guess, like an insult to Troutman, but it's not. He seems like a souped up version of Josh Hill, in that, you know, he's an amazing run blocker. He's a great pass blocker. You know, we haven't really seen him in the passing game yet, but we know he's one of the best blocking tight ends in the league already. You know, and that's what Josh Hill was for the 8 years he was here. Josh Hill was an amazing blocker. That's why Peyton loved him. Josh Hill could have played here until he was 40 years old if he wanted to. You know, he's just that player. Like when he got hurt last year, you heard Sean Payton say, well, that changes the whole dynamic of what we can and can't do on offense, you know, not having Josh Hill in the line.
He said, I think that was a key. That's a big key to our offense is his blocking ability. And yeah. I definitely think that Troutman's that guy, and you don't really need him. You know, if Juwan Johnson keeps on going the way he's going, you really don't need him to be the pass catching guy. You got somebody that could do that. And frankly, Taysom can do it too. He can catch passes and he's blocking pretty well.
Yeah. I'm going to give Troutman a pass on. So he played 52 plays.
He won't catch it.
He had six targets. For a tight end that, you know, is his second year, having six targets on 52 plays, I mean, he was open. He was, if he had caught the ball, we're talking about a really productive game from him. I'm going to give him a pass on the first week. Let's see what he can do.
I'm not saying he's a bust by any means. I still think he's a great.
My concern with what kind of Max, I'm not concerned about Callaway. I think he's a legit receiver. This is little Jordan Humphrey. I'm scared. I'm the Kenny Stills signing to me is because somebody wasn't running routes well enough to get open.
You know what, though?
Little Jordan Humphrey was getting open in preseason running against backups that are not in the league right now. Little Jordan Humphrey does not have the speed to get open, and he hasn't been the precise route runner. I'm going back to where I'm scared of little Jordan Humphrey again. An NFL receiver.
I'm going to counter you with this. Little Jordan Humphrey to me is Brandon Coleman from 3 or 4 years ago. Here's some clips floating around on Twitter. Scott, I'm going to send you one in a few minutes.
I saw him a couple of blocks. He had a couple of big blocks.
He was mauling people in the run blocking aspect of it. And that's what Brandon Coleman did. You know, Brandon Coleman was never – he was never good for more than 200 yards in a season because he was your fourth or fifth receiver. And that thing, that's
one a day.
If we're respecting little Jordan Humphrey to have like 800 yards, I mean, that's an indictment on our receiving core. And B, I don't think it's realistic. I think that guy is going to be he'll max out at like 300 yards in a season, you know, but he's going to just throw some vicious blocks and just be that dependable guy in that respect.
Yeah, Kenny Stills is gonna, zero. He's on pace for 0 yards for the season.
Kenny Stills is going to end up getting those 800 yards.
I hope so, man. I hope he still got the juice.
Jeff, the one thing I was going to say, when you came in, we were talking about if this was a, you know, Saints win or a Packers loss. I know it's first game of the season. The Packers were the number one scoring offense in football last year, and they didn't change that much around. They still got Aaron Jones. They still got Adams. They still got Lazard and the guy with six names. And Tanyan and all, and they still got – I mean, they do have some talented people on the offensive line. Like, this is still their last game that they played before this. They were finishing off a season of being the number one scoring offense in football.
Yeah, I think this was 150% absolutely a Saints win as opposed to a Packers loss.
Scott actually gave Green Bay credit. He said that.
I did not.
The Saints came out and did
2%.
I think what a lot of this comes down to, and this was like week one after this long, long, long off season, and it was a very strange off season for us as Saints fans because it was the first off season of Drew Brees' retirement, the first off season of the post-Brees era. Oh, you're going to lose all these free agents. I mean, you got national media thinking it was a big deal. We lost Alex Anal Zone. You know what I mean? Like, you got national media thinking it's a big deal. We lost T-Rex. And I feel like some of that thinking, I mean, our feeling, it wasn't extreme optimism. I mean, we've got some bold ideas of where we're going to finish. But it's like I was talking to Packers fan last week, and I never brought up, you know, like, you know, we do have the best offensive line in football and our defense, while man, Sean Payton has cobbled this defense that he wants together over the last several years. Like, we do have the DNA to be an extremely dominant team. And that's what you saw unfold.
I think the biggest difference between this year and previous years, we don't have the depth at all the positions that we had the last couple of years. But the frontline guys are still top notch. And the pieces are in place to have a top five defense, I think. You know, what are we, year three, four, or five into Dennis Allen?
Yeah.
The defensive coordinator. You know, these guys aren't learning the system in the preseason anymore. They're not, you know, having to ask questions. They just go in and they're reacting. You watch them pre-snap, you know, they're communicating like, all right, I see this, go do this. You know, there's no more questioning like, am I supposed to be here on this formation? You know, they know what's going on. But to me, it's the depth is the main thing that we've lost. But the frontline guys are still top guys.
Right. You know? I think you're right, too. Right. I think we touched on that either last week or the week before, that that was the big question mark of this year's team is if somebody gets hurt at a key position, that whole next man up is a bigger question mark than it's ever been.
And look, you're already seeing that. McCoy going down. Davenport's going to miss a few games.
So they go and they have to sign mercenaries.
Lattimore may miss a game or two.
Yeah. So speaking of that, I'm going to get out of game recap, move us into fake news / headlines.
Hello, I'm Kent Brockman, and this is Eye on Springfield.
And let's talk about that. So Lattimore had surgery this morning. Is that right? And after he signs for $97.6 million, 5 years. Wow.
Worth it. It's a large pin.
Right. Well, he signed first, right? He signed before the game.
Yeah.
Right. Then he played the game and gets hurt.
Did you see how he broke his thumb?
I didn't see, no.
It was on that last play where Davante Adams like caught the crazy ball that had like a 4-inch area to catch it. When he swiped down at the ball, he hit Davante Adams in the shin bone. Like, you can see it on the replay with him swiping as hard as he can. He hit the ball, but just got the end of it and slammed his thumb into his shin bone in the first half.
Shit. So how long is he out for, though? Didn't they say it's only going to be
these little bone surgeries? Yeah, I think 1 week for sure. Don't be shocked if he's back in 2 weeks.
Yeah, they said week to week, so.
Bring him in when we truly need him.
He played the second half with the bone chip.
Without the surgery. Like,
put it in a cast. He's already played with it in bone chip.
Right. All right, so Davenport's injury, what's this impact going to be? How long is he going to be out for?
Less than I thought. It wasn't a tear. Thank God it wasn't a tear.
Oh, it was not a tear. Okay. No. What?
I think him and Onyemata and Thomas are coming back at the same time.
Right, yeah.
I think five or – I mean, him and Onyemata and
now probably
Thomas
McCoy
are coming back at the same time.
We're going to get everybody back in week 6 or 7.
Please be before Tennessee.
To be fair,
for all you listeners who may not have heard, we're all going to Tennessee to this game, and we need the full complement of the Saints.
Max, are you in Tennessee
roster?
I was supposed to be. As of right now, we still are. I got to make sure everybody else is still in.
Yeah.
A buddy of mine lives in North Alabama. He's only about an hour away from Nashville. So it was his idea, you know, a couple months ago. So we're trying to get a group of people together. One guy is having twins pretty soon. So he's tapping out. But we're trying to see.
I got twins. I'm going. I mean, hey, I had them 13 years ago. But
you can't sit behind us, though, Max, because we're in the last row. So. but you can sit around us.
Not in the last year.
Hey, you come sit with me, Max. I'm in row five.
Yeah. Either way, yeah, the whole United States contingency of the Dome Patrol Podcast Network is going to be there.
That's awesome.
All right, though, McCoy, yeah, we talked about that calf strain on him. How long is he out for? What, 3 weeks?
4 to 5 weeks. I just had a calf strain. I was out of commission for 4 or 5 weeks, goodness. So it's
right. And you're not in the same shape, right? So we worked out and signed Austin Reeder from Kansas City, who was their center like last year.
The last 2 years in the Super Bowl.
So now why is he not their center now, though, and not being signed? Like, what changed?
Did you see the Super Bowl?
they cut both of their tackles and I guess the center as well, and just went, you know, they started from scratch.
Totally different direction, yeah.
Yeah.
So okay. So then this might be a nice little signing there. Kenny Stills, half of Saints fans are excited about this, the other half are not.
He's on the practice squad, though, right?
Yeah,
he'll be on the active roster by Sunday.
For now, yeah.
Sure. They probably just have to move stuff around to get him on the active roster.
Not into it.
Me and Jason are on opposite sides. The kicker's back on the practice squad, isn't he? Didn't they put Rosas back on the practice squad?
Yeah, but they protected him. He'll be promoted on Tuesday, too.
Not a fan.
Remember, you can only be promoted, what is it, 2 or 3 times before you either have to stay on the main roster or you have to be released. So these guys that are getting promoted from the practice squad are, you know, a couple week rentals, and then they're probably gone at that point. So
who do you think plays center this week? Because apparently, if Clapp would have been healthy, they said he would have gone in at center, and Ruiz would have stayed at guard.
Man, the way Ruiz looked, I'd leave his ass at center and leave
Throckmorton looked good too.
Yeah. Was Clapp not penalty, playing because he wasn't healthy, or he just wasn't active because they didn't think they would need Clapp?
He got the Clapp.
Clapp was hurt. I know.
Okay,
that.
He was okay. It was. Yeah.
But Throckmorton was good at Oregon, man. The dude played every position on the offensive line, so he was supposed to get
drafted. Don't you mean Tulane, Max?
As far as we know, Ruiz hasn't snapped a ball in a year. He did not play center at all during preseason. They have not worked him at center at all. He was not working as the second or third team center either. To come in, he got one practice snap, and then that's when I was like, this is why we lose it. Not because he can't block at center, because he can't snap the ball to a court. Like, that's just not a thing.
Well, right. And anytime he's never snapped to Jameis Winston.
No.
Right? Before he was snapping to Drew Brees.
The world? Like, it's pretty impressive. And, like, I don't know enough about the position to break it down. I know there's a huge difference between playing center, playing guard, playing tackle. It's not just one of those things like, oh yeah, just go stand over there and block people instead.
It's funny though how right, like Ruiz, the whole thing is like he had to be ambidextrous and then when we're finally like, no, 100% committed, you're not gonna play center. There's no fucking way you're playing center.
Five snaps in,
Ruiz grabbed the ball.
Well, at this point, if Clapp is healthy, does Clapp become? I mean, I guess you move Ruiz back to guard. I think that's the thing to do. But like, still.
But do you value Throckmorton better at guard or Clapp better at center?
Yeah, that's the question. I think you got to remember, the chemistry was easily the best center in the draft last year, man. Like Ruiz is a fucking animal, you know. And he was supposed to be the center, and they were going to move McCoy to guard.
Right.
But then there was no training camp or no preseason last year, and then he got hurt. So that derailed that plan. Right. So,
but now we have a whole week to put a whole game plan together with wherever you're going to put these guys. I think next week we'll get into that in the Saints preview, but next week's going to be even better than this week.
Jeff, did you mention the Michael Thomas roster news?
Not yet. So go ahead and do that. Cause yeah, my next thing was going to be about, the COVID thing, but
Michael Thomas moved to the COVID list. Okay.
So is he the one player that was part of the 8 people?
I think so.
Apparently.
Yes. Really thought it was going to be a Debo. I was so worried.
I was worried it was going to be a Debo. I'm glad it's not.
The only thing a Debo needed was a ball from Aaron Rodgers.
Well, you know, they said that Peyton, I've heard conflicting reports. I've heard Peyton said the team was 100% vaccinated. Then I've also heard he said 100% of the front offices.
They all are.
He said 100% of our staff personnel are vaccinated.
It's not players because Adebo is not vaxxed.
Right. You know, okay. So I think he's only
100%
one.
Of the Saints organization evacuated for Ida.
They weren't all vaccinated.
There is a top tier Saints player who has said out loud to the media that he is vaccinated, that I have heard from a pretty decent source that he just said that out loud because he didn't want to answer questions. He is not vaccinated.
Okay, well, that's another way to do it.
Not Michael Thomas. Another.
So,
I'm a little like it's a. Are you relieved, for the lack of a better word, that it is Michael Thomas that has COVID?
Yeah.
Than any other player because he's already out.
But from what I understand, it's different than last year because of the vaccine. So last year, without the vaccine, when you tested positive, they went through the contact tracing thing where if you were around anybody, so if you were in a meeting with other players and they had to sit out too.
Like the Denver quarterback room?
Right. Now with the vaccine, they don't do the contact tracing.
Right.
And you just have to, even if you test positives, I think if you come back with two negative tests.
Within
a certain amount of time, then you don't get put on that COVID list.
Okay.
Well, I guess my thing would be is this goes back to we were starting to say, okay, Michael Thomas is practicing with the team. He's rehabbing with the team. He's getting. And then what decisions is Michael Thomas making in his life that we're after all the stuff we just went through and him getting like, you know, maybe lied about or talking about his personal life and not responding to the team. Now he made some sort of decision that got him off by himself away from the team and got him COVID.
He did it with the team. The other, yeah. He was
no, right. I think
all these coaches, the nutritionist, like, I think some people went out partying.
Is that Michael Thomas was hanging out with his positional coach? And
I heard that he had gone to Philadelphia or something and did some stuff and then came back to the team.
Yeah, well, he's been with the team for over 2 weeks though.
But here's the thing, everybody, like, we can't vilify getting COVID. Okay. Like you can get COVID, but that's how society's getting to this point where like,
why is it every time?
Did you get AIDS? Like, it's not the same thing. You didn't go out and lick dirty drains or something. You get COVID just by going to the grocery store and the person next to you sneezes and you walk through their cloud of germs while you're going to pick produce.
And if I was a millionaire athlete depending on not having COVID to be able to do my job with my teammates, I'd send somebody else to the fucking grocery store for me.
Jeff, do you 100% know he didn't go and lick drains?
I mean, yeah.
I think that Jerry Jones pumped COVID through the AC units in their hotels in Dallas.
I think he was hanging out with Junior Gallet and that's how it happened.
Why does everybody think you got to be doing unsavory shit to catch COVID?
Right. Like, he had to do was go to Florida. That's what he did. And he got COVID.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, you get calm down, Florida, you get COVID. You get COVID in Florida.
Have you tested negative yet, Max?
Texas or Louisiana?
I mean, that's my point, Gunn. You're right. Like when people, so-and-so got COVID, why is it that we have, your brain automatically goes to like, they went and did the most dirtiest, unsavory, horrible thing that a human being can do when all they did was walk outside of their house, maybe, you know?
It's like they went on down to the fuck pits and they were hanging out in the fuck pits and they got the COVID.
I think it comes from last year. When Kamara got it and he was like out at the club or whatever, like I think that's where it kind of stems from. Like you automatically go to that place in your head, like they were doing something they weren't supposed to. And it's definitely not necessarily the case.
Right. But it probably was.
Either way, at least it wasn't a Debo.
Right. We all must protect him, put him in a bubble. Mm-hmm. All right. The other thing. So the Saints six coaches. I mean,
they must have had fun Saturday night.
No coordinators.
Yeah. So then that's
as long as it's not Peyton or Dennis Allen, we're fine.
Right. Okay. The other last thing on the fake news headlines is friend of the podcast. He's been on Thomas Morstead is a New York Jet now, and we wish him well.
Did you see his post?
No, I didn't.
He is so grateful for this new opportunity. Thank you, New York Jets. I'll give you everything I have. I've got so much to share, but family comes first. We'll catch y'all tomorrow. Hashtag take flight. Hashtag who dat for life. He put that in his post where he was announcing he signed with the Jets.
I love it.
I mean, class, just great guy.
That's it.
So you don't really want to play for the Jets. You just want to prove.
Well, look, at least
to pay for that house.
He's a pay, yeah,
yeah, he's definitely. Yeah, he got to finish up that house. Saints do play the Jets this year in December.
Oh, that's right. So a nice little reunion.
Is their punter hurt? Is that what the or did they just need? Does he did he suck? Like, does anybody know?
Didn't he hurt his knee on like the first play of the game? And they had their field goal kicker come in and kick a punt, and he kicked a 66-yard punt.
Jeez.
Like, why are they signing Morstead? He's not gonna do that this year.
Oh, well. All right. That's it for the headlines. Jason, why don't you take us through a quick pick'ems, and then Scott, we'll get to your thought.
Hey, Hank, I got to go ahead and sign off. Thanks for having me on.
All right, Max.
Talk to you guys later,
bro. Thanks for joining. I feel like it's the Manning. I feel like it's the Manning broadcast. Like, Max, you came in for the second quarter. Hey, good to see you. All right, we're going to bring in Russell Wilson next.
Are you? Is Max Russell Wilson or Charles Barkley?
Yeah, right.
He's Charles Barkley.
Okay. Just don't be a Kelsey.
Oh, Max. All right. Thanks for joining us, Max. Maybe we'll do it again sometime.
Alex, happy birthday.
Max. All right. And yes, we will talk about the Manning thing at the end of the show.
Thanks.
Jason, let's get through pick'ems, though.
It's time to play the game. Put your money on the table. Come on. It's the one game you never, ever win. Yeah. My game. Come on. My time. Yeah, what you got? You can't win. It's all about the game and how you play it. It's all about the throw and how you take it.
All right.
All right, all right, all right.
That's right, that's right. Week one of pick'ems in the books. We're on to week two, but before we get to that, we will recap the Dome Patrol picks. Jeff, you had the best week out of any all of us that were on the show, going 4-1. Scott and Wes went 2-3. James and myself went... I'm sorry, y'all went 3-2. James and myself went 2-3. It's week one, baby. I'm already in my
brain. Do I get the tiebreaker against Scott since he picked the Saints to lose?
No, that wasn't part of the pick'em.
That's not how it works.
Yeah. Pick'ems doesn't end after week one. And then Ben was last, 1-4. The 200 winning percentage.
You left somebody out.
Oh.
Uncle yeah. Baby Billy. Uncle Baby Billy went 3-2.
You left somebody out of there.
I didn't record Uncle Baby Billy's picks because she wasn't on the,
well,
on the
Uncle
show.
Well, he can't fucking do it.
He doesn't have opposable thumbs.
If you told him ahead of time, he could, but he has to. He has to participate like a fucking commoner.
Okay.
He can't push your toilet. He doesn't have opposable thumbs.
But for the record,
gotta wait for Jeff to like his tweet.
For the record, the motherfucker was 3-2. He was 3-2, which means he was better than. Hold on,
Ben.
I got my own.
He was better than Ben.
Better than Shen. Jason.
He was better than me. Better than James.
Yeah. That's why he didn't say it, because the cat did better than him.
Right.
Yeah, hold on. Who's this cat better than? He's as good as Wes. And he's better than James. And he's better than Ben. Better than a lot of people.
Yeah.
Yes, he is.
Better than me, though. All right.
Did he pick the Saints to lose like Scott did?
No, he didn't get involved in that, but you know,
he's smart. So all right, and then in the larger league, Allie Gibbs, first time player, is 4-1, tied with me for first place. Scott, Wes, Carp, Uncle Baby Billy are all 3-2. James, Jason, Farmer, aka Gamer Realtor, that's his name, DeMail Man, and Tom Ensign are all 2-3. And 1-4 is Ben, Sans Hobbs, Trevor Bruno. 0-5 is Drummer, Mr. Coach Klein, and of course, as is tradition, Neil. Neil started the season.
Wow.
0-5. Neil, what the hell, man?
He loves
is that
it.
Because Neil didn't make this picks, or
no,
Neil
no,
went 0-5?
Neil, Neil
it's
went
picked the Saints
0-5 the old-fashioned way.
That's hard to do.
Don't patrol pick'ems, that count.
That's right.
That doesn't teach you
all
anything.
All right. Moving on to week two here. Some interesting matchups going to be, you know, maybe a couple of surprising 2-0 teams, possibly a surprising 0-2 team or two. And we'll start our first game in the AFC East. Buffalo Bills coming off a loss last week to Pittsburgh. They traveled to Miami to play a Dolphins team that got a win against New England, thanks to some New England fumble at the end. But this is a big game here. I mean, Buffalo loses here. Now they're staring at 0-2, and Miami, the Dolphins, would be 2-0 if they were to win. This game is down in South Beach. Dolphins are getting 3.5.
Dolphins are getting 3.5?
Correct.
Ooh.
I will take the Bills and give up the points.
Wow. All right.
I'm going to take the Bills as well.
I watched that Bills game intently this week.
Yeah.
And they have offensive line problems.
Oh, no.
And they don't even pretend to have a pretense of a running game.
Is that due to injury or? I'm upset because I have Stephon Diggs in fantasy.
Just like
They throw it to him a lot. He's not getting sacked.
I'm invested. Jeff, you sound like my wife when I'm talking about like football stuff. Oh no, like you have no idea what I just said. Like you don't have, like,
I genuinely care. Like that was a genuine like, oh no, what the fuck is happening to my fantasy football league? All right. So Gunn, does that mean you are taking?
No, I'm not taking anybody. The fucking cat makes my pick.
Okay. I'm actually going to take Buffalo because I think they're going to bounce back from last week's embarrassment.
Well, I am going to be the one person who picks the Dolphins. Buffalo will be starting the season 0-2. Right in the hole.
That's what she said.
All right. Our next
Gaines and Ben are not here. All right. Okay.
Yeah, right. The Dallas Cowboys coming off a loss to Tampa in the opening night of the season. Played well on offense. Defense is still suspect. They will be getting their center back this week, though. Will they travel to Los Angeles to play a Chargers team coming off a win against Washington? The only issue here is going to be what percentage of the stadium are going to be Cowboys fans, because it's probably going to be 70-75% Cowboys fans in the stadium. So, and yet somehow the Chargers favored by 3.
I think that I'm going to take the Chargers. I think the big difference in this game is Michael Gallup is missing for the Cowboys. I think that's going to be a big problem for them because you can't trust Amari Cooper.
Should we not have Cowboy games on here because Wes is in that area? Like, doesn't he have insider information that maybe we don't have?
I mean, you could say that about you and Jeff. Y'all are in Cowboy country.
Negative, Ghost Rider. I'm taking the Cowboys.
I can tell you this. I had some stakes betting against the Cowboys on the opening night, Thursday night last week. And, you know, you get a little bit of the sweat sometimes. And then every so often they'd pan that camera over to Mike McCarthy on the sideline and you instantly feel better. Picking against the Cowboys is going to feel so good this year because you're going to get those Mike McCarthy moments. And there were Mike McCarthy moments in that game.
I, that's the thing. Remember when?
Oh no!
I've got the Cowboys defense.
I had Gallup. He's out now. Oh no!
By the way, Scott, I'm pretty sure the Gallup news is national.
I'm aware it's national news. I'm talking about.
I didn't call somebody that works for the Cowboys.
Might be some kind of insider news. Right,
I'm gonna take Dallas though because I have lost all faith in the Chargers. Every time I picked them for the past 7 years, they've let me down. So I'm taking Dallas.
Well, that's why I'm picking the Chargers, because this is a new Chargers. They have a new coach. They no longer have Anthony Lynn blowing games for them. And yes, Mike McCarthy is on the other side. Remember when Green Bay wanted Mike McCarthy over Sean Payton?
Thank you. Sean Payton does.
Right?
All right.
Yeah, the Chargers quarterback, his last name is Herbert, not Abear, so they can win games.
Yes.
Ooh.
All right. Our next game, pair 1-0 teams, the Las Vegas Raiders.
What do I type there? LV, I guess.
LV, yes.
LVR or LV?
LVR, LV.
Somehow when I wrote it first, I put LAV.
That's not what you put, because that's close. That's close to LAR and LAC. Yeah.
No, I definitely put LAV.
The Raiders. LVR.
Yep.
Lav.
This is just Lav. Not right.
Lav. Rowan.
Yeah, it's Lavender versus Pittsburgh. I mean, that's
what Lavender.
So the Raiders have a crazy win against the Ravens last night. Yeah. Absolutely insane. Like, I turned the game off.
Second best game of the week.
Yes.
Yes.
So they've traveled to Pittsburgh to play a Steelers team that comes off a pretty comfortable win at Buffalo on the road. Now they're back home. They're favored by 5.5.
Pittsburgh is favored by 5.5?
Correct.
I'm taking Pittsburgh. I think the Raiders were – John Gruden should have left his legacy in Tampa Bay. I get it. They're paying him a lot of money, and he needed to there's too much for him to pass up. But I think the Raiders look terribly led. And I can't trust
David. Well, as long as they give Darren Waller like 20 targets a game.
Yeah, but he's only going to catch eight of them.
Catch right.
He's only, I mean, Jesus.
All right, I'm taking Pittsburgh. Can't believe I'm giving up 5.5 points.
I'm taking Pittsburgh as well.
Oh, no.
This is a...
I want to hear what Gunn has to say.
This is a Pittsburgh sweep. I'm taking Pittsburgh, too.
Wes was spot on about the Raiders. It was fun watching the Mannings dissect the comedy that is the Las Vegas Raiders. I mean, there was a lot going on that Manning show, but if you watched, and especially as they kind of, when Russell Wilson got involved and the game got good and they started, like, they were like, what the fuck are the Raiders doing about two dozen times? So
I think the rumors
of the Steelers' demise, the rumors of the Steelers' demise has been greatly exaggerated. One thing that people forget is, like, a lot of times these big time players and big time teams aren't at the ones that typically get banged up, like the Gronks of the world that ain't going to be shit in week seven. They're healthy in week one and two. Pittsburgh started 11-0 last year.
Mm. There you go.
Yep.
Oh, yes.
All right, our next game, another battle of one of the teams. The San Francisco 49ers coming up a win against Detroit. They got out to a big lead, but they let Detroit back in it. Jimmy G is still at QB, but they did lose Raheem Mostert, but it doesn't matter. It seems like they can just plug in a running back from anywhere, as they did this past week. They traveled to Philly to play an Eagles team that really put a whipping on Atlanta, and it was great to watch. It was, I mean, classic Atlanta. Shitty offensive line. That's it. So this game is in Philly, and the Eagles are getting 3.5 at home.
What?
Oh, give me the Eagles.
Give me the
all
Eagles.
Day,
give me,
all day Eagles.
I think this is a low-scoring game with probably some bad turnovers. But, yeah, give me definitely the points in the Eagles. That's a lot of points for how low-scoring I think this game will be.
Everybody seems to be infatuated with San Francisco.
I don't know why.
Jimmy Garoppolo is still their quarterback.
Look, well, I mean, I know they played
they're healthy.
They got a lot of guys. They lost a lot of guys last year.
When San Francisco is healthy, San Francisco is scary. So, like what I just said, they're one of those teams. They got everybody right now. And when they got everybody, that offense is outstanding. And it's the smart people in Vegas were betting the team total over and on that game because San Francisco, they knew San Francisco's offense is going to explode because everybody's there. Now, they already lost Mostert. What's it look like moving forward? But they better than Philly.
Called that on track, right? All right, Jason, who are you taking?
Yeah. Who are you taking? Mm. And why?
I'm gonna take San Francisco. What? Philly looked good last week, but they played Atlanta. I think Atlanta is a bottom three team in the league.
That was awesome.
So that's what I think.
He ain't lying.
And now our shitty game of the week.
Here we go. No. Piece of shit car. I got a piece of shit car. That fucking pile of shit never gets me very far.
And this may be the only time in the history of the show that we've ever had this one team in the shitty game of the week, just because it was my one opportunity to put them in there, and it kind of works. But week two, it's hard. There's teams that you know are shitty, but then they're playing good teams. So it was hard. So I took the opportunity to put a team in the shitty game of the week that is, I'm sure, has never been in this position. The New England Patriots.
Yes! That's who I was thinking of.
Led by young Mac Jones. Coming off a loss last week, fumbled away the game. Probably should have won, didn't. But hey, didn't win. They traveled to New York to play another shitty team, the New York Jets, who also lost one of their, maybe their best offensive lineman this past week. Doesn't bode well for you fantasy owners of Zach Wilson or Corey Davis.
Oh, no.
this game's in New York. Jets are getting 5.5.
Damn, that just made it hard.
And they signed Morsett.
That's so
what effect
said.
Does that have on the game?
What effect does signing Morsett have on the game? Man, this is tough. I was definitely, I was going New England easily, but man, 5.5 points.
5.5 is a lot.
The Jets aren't good though.
I'm definitely taking the Patriots in this. I don't know if the Jets are going to score in this game. I mean, they're pretty awful.
And the Pats typically usually
I am going to take the goddamn Jets.
I'm going Pats.
Yeah, I'm going to go Pats as well.
I'm not ready to believe
smart enough
Jones
to cut Cam Newton. They can score 6 points, right?
5.5 is a lot. We're not asking who's going to win the game.
And I think the Jets are bad.
If the Jets don't score.
Right.
New England 6-0 covers the 5.5.
Right. I'm taking the Patriots. Can't wait to see who Baby Billy picks. Uncle Baby Billy.
We'll see.
Is it Dr. Uncle Baby Billy?
He is a doctor. He's a PhD.
Am I the only one earlier?
The licensed marriage Scott and family therapist.
Uncle Baby Billy is a she.
I did not. I think
somebody did. I thought somebody threw a she in there earlier.
Tried to put a gender on my boy.
I know, right?
He's a cat. Barely a fucking cat.
Is that what you guys said? Somebody said that.
Ooh, the grass is soft. All right, there's your picks. Everybody get them in before the game. When I like them, I've recorded them like I did about 30 minutes before we started recording the show this week. I got you, though. I got you. Go ahead and tweet them in before the games kick off. All games are Sunday games, so you should be all right if you tweet them in by Saturday. All right, now, very quick Saints preview. We are running short on time. We do still have to talk about the Mannings. Let's do a quick preview on the Saints versus the Carolina Panthers. First question out of the gate comes from Hungry Hootat, who says, what's up with that damn augmentation Panther shit running around that stadium?
Yeah, it was pretty weird. Apparently the Ravens did it a few years ago where they were the first team to do it. I don't know.
I have experience with this. A few years ago, we went to WrestleMania, all right, in the Dome, and they apparently did a shitload of augmented reality for that broadcast. It was like the first time they ever showed it. Got home, watched the replay, and we're like, what in the fuck? Did we miss all that? Did a White Walker come down when Seth Rollins came out? You can't see it in the stadium.
Yeah.
Right.
It's not really there. It's not really there. It's not really there.
Only in your mind.
It's like Pokemon Go or Jurassic World.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Am I the only one when Gunn said that I have some experience with this? Thought like maybe he had some kind of hallucinations.
Yeah, he was that too. But this
I
is
have
that,
seen yeah, a but... massive cat attack a stadium before.
Right.
Many things can be true.
All right, so the game.
Oh yeah. Oh okay.
So the Saints will actually play a game in this stadium. This is a real away game. Are they staying on the East Coast or are they bouncing back over to Dallas?
They're in Fort Worth today.
Yeah.
Okay. So, all right. Going into this game, we kind of talked a little bit about what the changes the Saints are making. What are the Panthers team going to look like?
Sam Darnold,
new quarterback. Obviously, you have Christian McCaffrey back.
Robbie Anderson out wide. Terrence Marshall. But
yeah.
A Joe Brady offense, but what's their defense like? I know that last year they used all the picks on defense, but I mean, they almost lost to the Jets.
They look like shit.
And they
in the
only
red
scored
zone.
What 19 points versus the Jets?
Yeah,
I mean,
they did sign Dan Arnold in the offseason.
Like that's a thing. The national media thinks that Dan Arnold's a thing. Isn't that funny? It's like we know the real Dan Arnold.
I mean, Benedict. I don't see any reason why we don't demolish this team. Like we should just. Fucking just skull fuck the piss out of them.
Some of that the overconfidence from last week.
No.
I mean
they're bad.
Well, and McCaffrey had 30 touches in the game. I just don't see how he's going to be able to stand getting that many touches against us. He had that many touches against a pretty bad team in order for them to
win. And our run defense is stout. The only thing, you know, that I worry about with him is catching balls out of the backfield, but I really think we have the linebackers in
Quan Alexander. That's
Quan Alexander. That's
what he does.
That can cover him. Yeah. So I don't see him, you know, being as big of a deal as he could be.
He's getting
he plays into our strength.
He's getting hit this week hard.
Yeah,
he plays into our defensive strength.
And it's a division game. You know the Saints are going to be up for it. This is really for first place in the division because they won last week too. So, yeah. I mean, it's only week two, but it's first place in the division, whoever wins the game.
So is this a run game ball control strategy, or is this air it out and take advantage of the Panthers' secondary?
I honestly don't know their secondary that well to really say that.
I was doing some Panthers research last night. Their number one son. Their number one nickel corner is out. Their number two nickel corner is out, and they shifted a safety to put come play nickel corner. So they're now they're starting to back up at safety.
So they're thin. So they're thin.
Everybody, yeah. Everybody's got a problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't.
It's exposing their weakness, right?
Just, I don't mind a balanced game. Like, I prefer a balanced game. Hey, I think
was this the most
they gave
run
up 258 yards passing to Zach Wilson.
Yeah.
But was this debut. Sean Payton's most run attempts like in a single game ever?
No.
Was it the fewest pass attempts for a Sean Payton quarterback ever?
No.
I mean, it's only 20-something.
Yeah, that maybe. I think the Bills game a few years ago, we had
less than
rushes.
20 against we had less than 20 against Denver last year, didn't we?
Yeah, oh, two. Yeah. Maybe we throw two passes in the game.
That's because Taysom ran on 85 of the pass plays.
I mean, I prefer just whatever's going to take to win the game, and if it's a balanced offense, then it's well, a balanced offense. You know, I mean, I don't.
I really enjoyed the balanced offense look that this week. Like I that was nice to watch us actually establish a real running game and control the clock. And
if Jameis needs to let it fly, he can let it fly. You know, he can obviously turn that switch like he did at the end of the game with Harris. You know, he can. And you know, one thing that you notice is just he's so smooth throwing the ball. Like
what in the world is going on right now?
What?
You're saying like three sentences in a row that are good about Jameis.
I'm telling you, I like Jameis Winston. I told y'all I like Jameis Winston.
And I refuse to believe you.
Are you actually predicting a Saints win for the first time this year, Scott? Dude.
Yes, I am.
All right, score prediction then.
Well, wait, 1 second. Let me get this out.
Segue that into your prediction.
He flicks the ball so smoothly. Like Drew, the passes that Drew threw deep, he would have to like basically get like a 5 yard running start. To get and throw with every muster of his fiber and being to get the ball downfield. And Jameis is just like, just a little flick and it's downfield.
So it's amazing to see an athlete back there, right? You know,
it is.
Not that Drew's not an athlete, but you know what I mean? Just like,
I mentioned that on the instant reaction. My buddy Andrew was talking about that. He's like, Jameis throws so weird. I'm like, no, you've just been watching a quarterback for 15 years that has to use every ounce of his body to get the ball 40 yards downfield. Like this is what throwing should look like with when you're built to throw. It's just it is different for us though. We've been watching a
It's too effortless. It's too effortless. He's not trying.
I'm gonna go score prediction 38-10.
Poof, wow.
Saints. Whew. Saints, if I didn't make that clear enough. Saints.
I mean we have to ask with you.
38-10.
All right.
I got 33-13 Saints.
Gun, Jason?
I got 42-13.
Yeah.
I go 34-17.
I'll go 45-17.
Ooh. Yeah. Jeff, you might as well just push it to a 50 burger and call it a day.
Well, not
25 points.
That's next week. That's the week after when we play against New England. All right, everybody. So now instead of final thoughts, what we're going to do is we're going to talk about the whole Manning experience. Because
I have a final thought. Can I give a final thought later?
Fine.
Right. Are we charging these people by the minute? Like, why are you in such a hurry?
Yeah, I've got shit I got to go do.
Obligations here.
Yeah. So
to the public.
Manning broadcast. Opinions on that. Are you watching? Like, are you all in on this? Is this greatest?
I never want to watch a game any other way.
Yes.
Is it because you actually enjoyed it or because it's hilarious to watch the train wreck?
Both. The first like 5 or 6 minutes, I was like, is this a good, like, I'm enjoying it. This is funny, but this is pretty bad too. And I know you guys were going after Eli pretty hard at first. It balanced out. After a while, it balanced out and was actually hilarious. And then I guess at the beginning,
Eli felt like a third wheel.
I don't like Charles Barkley coming in necessarily, but the people that are playing in the NFL that have already played that day or played the previous day, it was cool seeing their different things. Kelsey being the first person to curse on the show this year was hilarious. But I loved it. I don't want to watch a football game any other way. I can't wait till the new Saints game.
How often do we say the announcers suck? Right? like in this current Monday Night Football regular announce team, I can't remember what the iteration is now, but it's horrible. So when you, it's almost like networks listening to you and they go, okay, we can put more content, we can put on more channels, more ratings. It's in their interest to do it too. I mean, they didn't have this like brilliant artistic idea. They're like, we can make more fucking money by doing Peyton and Eli.
Well, that's it. Like, I had no real rooting interest in this game, but because Peyton and Eli were doing, like, oh, I'll check it out. So I left it on. Like, I probably would not have watched the regular broadcast all night, but this, like, I left Peyton and Eli. I left it on all night. And
you were watching a Peyton and Eli show with a football game as the backdrop.
And they threw a lot out there early, and it seemed like it was too much, but you could tell, like, they settled down. Like, it's going to take time. Like, they'll settle into a groove, and it's going to come off.
It was so, like the first ever Dome Patrol podcast. I mean, they're trying things out, you know, like, right. Oh, let's try this out. And they were giving a lot of high energy to begin with because they didn't want to come out flat. And I applaud them for that. Test a few things out. Next week, they might look at it and say, you know what? We don't have to throw all the gimmicks in the first 5 minutes. Like, we could do Peyton with the helmet or the draw. I love the drawing up of the play. But I think, yeah, like what I think most people liked as well is this wasn't your boring talking heads who are basically reading the fucking player bios and being a PR machine for the NFL.
It wasn't Dennis Miller, babe. Come on.
Instead, they were like for them to say like how he was obsessed with David Carr having to shush the Oakland crowd up, like just telling the crowd shut up. Like, you're never gonna hear Al Michaels talk like that.
Does Chris the average football fan, do you think, enjoy that? Or is that us because, like, we're into this and, like, we like trying to understand plays? And does the average football fan even – are they just completely annoyed by, like, what are these guys even talking about?
So like, I'm really wondering. I think younger fans are liking this. I think your old – like, your grandpa is not going to like this.
I think this is crack for white dudes our age. Like, this is designed for us.
So I don't want them to fix it, Jeff.
I have some.
I want the producer still talking in the ears. I want the whole thing of them cutting people off as they go to commercials. I don't want them.
Great.
To fix it.
They definitely didn't know how to go into commercials.
No, they have no idea. Scott, you've been trying.
Are we supposed to tell our guests?
I have some statistics. So the Monday Night Megacast, which includes the ESPN, ABC, ESPN2, and ESPN Deportes viewership, 15.3 million viewers.
How many?
15.3 million viewers. It's Monday Night Football's most watched week one game since 2013. It's up 42% and 17% from ESPN's 2020 and 2019 week one early game. There were 800,000 viewers for the Peyton and Eli audience.
Which isn't a good number. Which is not
That's
a
it?
Good number.
That's
it's,
really
yeah, it's a bad.
That is a fantastic number for Twitch.
Yeah,
it was, and that is that is
for
what
ESPN 2 like. Manning's that's a 800,000 is a okay. terrible number. This, like, I'm hoping it gets better.
Let me tell you, this was a quintessential live stream experience that you would get on Twitch. That 100%, if you ever watched any kind of like the Overwatch or League of Legends or any video game tournaments and any kind of live streamers on Twitch or YouTube or Madden tournaments or things like that, this is kind of what you get. Like, it is a show. It is about Peyton and Eli hanging out, talking, sitting in their living rooms. It is not. And that was my original mistake coming in, was thinking like, this is going to be Peyton and Manning, or the two Mannings, trying to do the play-by-play and the color guy, where instead, no, this was sitting in your living room with Peyton and Eli having a great time.
So I think that 800,000 number will grow. I think a lot of people tweeted about it. A lot of people were talking about it, and the number will grow. Oh, yes, yes, yes. It will grow. That's what she said.
That's what she was hoping.
Yes.
So I'm all in. I'm all in for it. I want more of it. I do want the Charles. I like the idea of like maybe that's their whole thing, is like the first quarter is Peyton and Eli goofing off. Second quarter. Now, we're going to need more jokes, guys. Like, okay, we get it. Peyton has a big forehead. They neither of you can run, and Eli is the lesser of the two. So, and then, did you ever feel bad for Eli? Like, Peyton just,
God,
constantly shut him up. Like, shut up. You don't know what you're talking about. And then I like bringing in a non-football guy as your second quarter guest, because the game is still not, like, it got better because the game got better and they started paying attention to the game. But bring in Charles Barkley to talk during the first quarter, second quarter, because who gives a fuck what's going on in the field yet? You know, the game's still unfolding. I don't know. That's all.
I think you heard good stories with Ray Lewis, with the story about how, you know, Eli was pointing out the Mike linebacker and Ray Lewis is like, no, I'm not the Mike linebacker. He's the Mike linebacker. And stuff like that, I think is just great.
Yeah. You had three future, one current, I guess, as Eli in the Hall of Fame too. Yeah, three Hall of Fame quarterbacks, one currently playing. At the end of this game, in real time, on the major broadcast feed, on a major network, talking shit about another current quarterback.
And a future Hall of Fame tight end, linebacker, and a guy that got away with murder. I mean,
but what I'm saying is, you've never seen people talk shit. Like, the announcers are kind.
Oh yeah,
they don't ever.
It was great.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was subtle. It was subtle, but you could see Russell Wilson, Eli, and Peyton goofing on Carr
for sure. Well, and I loved the Peyton goes, remember when you ran a 6.240 as a freshman in high school? He goes, you made me run it with my helmet on. You told me I had right. to. That was the rules. They weren't making that up. Like, you could tell that's something that genuinely, like, Peyton trolled him.
Every
as
Thanksgiving,
a teenager up, to yeah. make right. fun of him and make him look really stupid.
So, yeah, I this was fantastic. This was genius. I think it's not for everyone. It is, there are certain people who are not going to like this because they're brainwashed into thinking the only way to watch a football broadcast is with your boring play-by-play and your color analysis guy or whatever. And then we're going to have all this new generation, the people who are a little more open, the people who have hungered, like, I think, Gunn, you were the one who said, how many times have you sat there and said how boring all of the announcers are? Like, we were so excited about Tony Romo, because he was the first time we got something that was a little bit different. And we were excited for Drew. Drew
Brees. Nance Romo is beauty. Yeah. Nance Romo, but
this is a completely different animal.
Right.
This is a show. And it should not, you're right, it shouldn't change. They should not improve the production value.
Is there anybody else that should be doing it? If another channel goes to do this, I love Drew Brees. I'd love to hear him break down plays. I think he's too nice to make it sound like the quarterback is stupid or
Peyton Manning can get away with it.
He can get away with it. Because I think David Carr, after the game, would listen to what Peyton Manning said, making fun of him, and be like, okay, cool, Peyton. Like, I don't know if anybody's going to be mad at him after they hear the things he's said about him. Is there anybody else that could do this, or anybody else you would want to hear doing this that, like, would be great at it and not screw it up?
You saw Barkley was their first guest that they went to, and Peyton and Eli loosened up after Barkley got involved. It's like Barkley was kind of like pulling them into the pool, helping them with their swim lesson,
I want Shaquille O'Neal doing this for basketball games.
Yeah, you could do Barkley and do the TNT
Mitch
crew.
Shaq would be
doing this during basketball with Shaq and Barkley and Kenny. Bro, that would be amazing.
I would love Shaquille O'Neal personality doing this would be insane.
Yeah. They need to have him as a guest.
For sure.
Oh, they surely probably will. I mean,
you could do those three, four guys every night.
All right. Final thoughts.
Go, guys.
Who has a final thought? We don't all have to do them. Who has one? Because we don't need a good game. I wish us good luck, a good healthy season, whatever.
Go Saints.
I got a final thought.
Who that? Go ahead. What's your final thought?
My final thought is this. They typically tell you, don't bet for your favorite team. Don't bet on your favorite team. The national media disrespect and devaluing of the Saints and the Saints offense specifically moving forward in these next few weeks, bet on your home team. Bet on your favorite team.
For the first time ever, it might actually work out.
People already do. They just,
Yep. All right. That's a good – I like that final thought, Gunn. That's a really good final thought. And nobody else gets one. Oh, shut up. So, No, actually, that's a good final thought, too. So that's all the show we have for you right now. We're going to thank our loyal listeners for downloading each week and telling all of your friends about the Dome Patrol United podcast network, where you only have to subscribe to one feed to receive multiple podcasts for free, including the 2-Point Conversion Instant Reaction Show, the Dome Patrol podcast, the BS and Beer Saints podcast, the Pelican Plunge, the Premier League podcast, Taking the Over with Billy Gunn, and the Tiger's Den. Follow each show on Twitter at Dome Patrol PCast, Dome Patrol UK, at BS and Beer Media, at Taking the Over, at Tiger _ Podcast, and at Don't Patrol Prim. Follow us on Facebook and find us on Twitch at twitch.tv/Don't Patrol Podcast. And then there's the old fashioned way of listening to us, Don't Patrol Podcast.
Dadgum.
Say bye bye, donkeys.
Bye bye, Aaron Rodgers, double nut tap donkeys.
Good night.
Good night, Who Dat Nation.
Good evening, everybody. I'm Jim Lampley, along with Danny Wilson, and what a game we have for you today. The Jacksonville Jaguars play host to the New York Jets. And Danny, the Jaguars come into this game as big favorites, but will they live up to the hype?
Well, they are big favorites, Jim, no doubt about that. 9.5 points, to be exact. Now, what that means is, if a person bet the Jaguars on a parlay with, let's say, Cincinnati, who, as we know, won earlier today, that would pay that person 13-5. So, if a person had bet, let's say, $127,000, that would pay off $457,200. That would cover any bad wagers that that person would have made in the past. Why, it's like wiping the slate clean, Jim. That person would be even for the first time in his life.
Well, there's no question the Jaguars are a powerhouse offense, but let's be honest. This football team is only as good as its quarterback, Mark Brunell.
No doubt about that, Jim. When Brunell is healthy, the Jags are unbeaten and furthermore have covered the spread each and every time. Now, without Brunell, they have eaten it and eaten it hard. So with a healthy Brunell out there today, that parlay looks to be money in the bank.
But is he healthy? That has to be the big question mark here today.
Well, I have to disagree with you there, Jim. I have heard absolutely no one question this young quarterback's health.
Well, Danny, I ran into him at the hotel this morning, and to me, he looked pale. He complained of stomach pains and nausea. He had, in a nutshell, flu-like symptoms.
Are you kidding? Brunell's looking great out there. He will easily cover the spread. Easily. Very easily. Flu. What are you, a doctor? What are you, suddenly Dr. Jim Lampley?
Certainly, I'm not a physician. You're right about that. I'm just a sports broadcaster who has just gotten over a bout of the Hong Kong flu. And when I saw Brunell this morning, he displayed the very same symptoms. Well, the kickoff sails through the end zone. And so Mark Brunell and the Jaguars will set it up at the 20-yard line. And as we get underway, let's take a look at the defense of the Jets, that outside linebacker.
What symptoms? What symptoms?
Well, when I first came down with the Hong Kong flu, Danny, I had nausea, stomach cramps, and chills.
Chills? Chills? Well, that's interesting, Jim, because earlier in your story about Mark Brunell in the hotel, he didn't have chills, did he?
No, he didn't. But we'll soon see how Brunell is feeling as he lines up for the snap. Brunell falls back, fakes a handoff. He's got some time. Going deep to a wide-open Jimmy Smith. And touchdown! Mark Brunell, on the first play of the game, finds Jimmy Smith with an 80-yard touchdown strike.
Yes, and the Jaguars are ahead 6-0 in the first minute of the game. Well, how about that? Mark Brunell looking a little sickly out there, isn't he, Jim? Hey, Jim, when you had your Hong Kong flu there, was one of your symptoms throwing an 80-yard touchdown strike?
No, I can't say that it was, Danny, but let's check in now with Lynn Swan over on the sideline. Swanny, what's the feeling now on that Jacksonville bench?
Well, naturally, they're elated. Their game plan was to strike early and demoralize the Jets, and so far, that's exactly what they've done. Mark Brunell told me he's feeling great. His throwing arm feels stronger than ever. His only complaint is he feels it's a little cold in the stadium.
Cold? What do you mean cold, Swanee? It's 92 degrees out.
Still in awe, Brunell feels the stadium is a little chilly for his liking.
Because, Swanee, he almost certainly has the Hong Kong flu.
All right, let's drop the Hong Kong flu thing, huh? Now, Mark Brunell is going to win this game, fellas, and I'll tell you why. Because he is a world-class quarterback.
Well, I'll tell you, Danny, he's certainly a world-class young man. And at halftime, we'll have an up-close and personal profile of Mark Brunell. You know, I had the pleasure of doing the report this week, and I can tell you, he's not just a great football player, but a first-class human being.
You did the report?
Yeah, I did. I spent the entire week with Brunell. He even took me over to his home. And the work this young man does for his community is truly inspiring.
Hey, Lampley, let me ask you a question. When you did this profile on Mark Brunell, when you went over to his house and you were with his family and you did your up-close and personal profile, did you happen to have the Hong Kong flu?
Ugh, the worst case ever. Terrible. And we'll be back after these messages. Welcome back. The third quarter begins momentarily. First, let's take a look back at the first half, and what an interesting first 30 minutes it was. The Jets seeking an upset, leading 17-7, all their points coming off of turnovers by Mark Brunell. And we gotta tell you, Brunell looks considerably less than 100%.
Seven interceptions in a row? Seven? Jim, how does a guy throw seven interceptions in a row?
Just a wild guess here, Danny, but when I had the Hong Kong flu, one of my symptoms was complete color blindness. Now, Mark Brunell may not be able to differentiate his own players from those of the Jets, and that is something that a quarterback must be able to do in this league. Danny, what did the Jaguars have to do here in the second half to get back into the game?
I don't know.
Well, as the teams line up for the second half kickoff, let's check in again at field level with Lynn Swann.
Well, some good news from the Jacksonville locker room. I just spoke to the team physician who has been treating Brunell, and he is reporting a complete recovery. He calls it nothing short of a miracle. I also talked to Brunell, and he says he's feeling 100% and went as far as guaranteeing a victory. Back to you guys.
Good news indeed, if you're a Jaguar fan.
Guaranteeing a victory. Jim, look at Brunell. He looks good. He isn't trembling anymore.
It certainly does look for the moment like a different Mark Brunell. He has a spring in his step now as the Jaguars line up in shotgun formation. Brunell pulls out, fires to McCardle. He's loose downfield, 25 yards, and that's a perfect strike. Vintage Mark Brunell.
Vintage. Oh, my God, he completed a pass. He's vintage Mark Brunell.
Jacksonville lines up in slot formation. Smith wide right. No huddle. Brunell takes the snap. Quarterback draw. Brunell roars down the middle. He's got the first down and more, dragging Jets defenders down to the 35-yard line.
Yes.
Can you believe
it? Can you believe it?
And Brunell points to the crowd, exhorting them to get into it, and they respond.
And they respond in Jacksonville.
Brunell sending a third quarter message to the New York Jets.
And the message Brunell is sending is simply this. We are going to win this football game, and not only are we going to win, we're going to win big. We're going to cover the 9.5 points, and we are going to make some lucky fella $457,200. I got to get a smoke.
Brunell sets up in front of a single setback, pulls back, fires towards the sideline, picked off by Brian Johnson. Johnson across midfield. He'll easily take this one back the distance. 20, 10, no flags. Touchdown, New York Jets.
Hey, I wasn't looking. What happened there?
And the Jets, looking for the upset, now go ahead 24-7. And the Jacksonville crowd, so euphoric moments ago, now totally silenced as we check in again with Lynn Swann.
Well, bad news for Jacksonville, Jim. After that last play, Mark Brunell walked to the sideline, and he is vomiting in a bucket.
What?
Swanee, let me ask you a question. Was that vomit a milky gray color?
Well, Jim, let me take a look. Yes, it is milky gray, and he is on his third bucket. Back to you guys.
Yep, classic Hong Kong flu.
You shut up, all right? Now, Swanee, this is Danny Wilson. Listen, Brunell obviously doesn't have it today. He's going to lose this game. He's going to lose a lot of money for a lot of people now. Now, is there any talk of replacing him?
Yeah, that's another fascinating development, Danny. At halftime, Brunell felt so healthy, he was infused with so much confidence that he sent both backup quarterbacks home.
What? Well, why would he do that?
Brunell says it was his way of making a statement.
And what a statement it was. This game has everything. And now as Mark Brunell, fills his sixth bucket to the brim with milky gray vomit, we'll step away. With 2 minutes left to play, this has been a game for the ages. The Jacksonville Jaguars lead the Jets of New York 28-24 with no help from star QB Mark Brunell. Since the first minutes of the game, all the Jaguars' points have come from defense and special teams. Brunell's play, more and more erratic, but Danny Wilson, they have the ball, and it looks like the Jaguars are going to salvage a miracle win.
Well, it really is amazing, Jim, that I am still in this game. The Jaguars are ahead by 4. The spread is 9.5. Now, what that means is, to win this game, all Jacksonville has to do is score a touchdown.
Well, technically, they don't, of course, Danny. If they can hold on to the ball, they'll win the game by 4.
Now, what do you have to say something like that for? I'm feeling good over here.
Brunell with the football at the 50-yard line on a field which has begun to take on a uniformly milky gray hue. I don't believe there's a single square inch of this turf on which Mark Brunell has not vomited.
I mean, my point is this. The Jaguars have the football. It's still possible they could score a touchdown.
Very unlikely, Danny. The Jets are out of timeouts and will soon reach the point where Brunell will simply run out the clock.
Yeah. I'm going to pace around the booth a little bit, Jim.
Which makes it a good time to check in with Lynn Swann and see what's going on down on the field.
An interesting development. Moments ago, Mark Brunell told me he was becoming afraid of the football, claiming that when the ball was snapped to him, it would become a live cobra.
What did Swanee just say about a cobra?
Well, as expected, Brunell begins to believe the football is a cobra because in stage 4 of the Hong Kong flu, patients often report dementia. Funny story, Danny. When I was in the latter stages of the Hong Kong flu, I remember lying in my hotel room bed, absolutely convinced that my dead grandmother was crawling up my leg with a knife in her mouth. Turned out it was just a French fry on my leg. Really nasty flu. Brunell takes the snap, scrambles, vomits. The Jets are giving him a wide berth now, as the vomit is a black bile, thick with deadly infection, and that creates a hole that Brunell can exploit. He takes off down the field. What courage this young man shows as he shambles toward the end zone, black bile spewing from his mouth, cradling what he must now believe is a dangerous viper under his left arm to score meaningless touchdown. Time runs out. The Jaguars have won it 34-24 in a classic comeback game.
Oh, my God, that was a great football game. I gotta get going, Jim. Yes!
Danny Wilson leaving the booth with the same elation with which this Jacksonville crowd leaves the stadium, and why not? But on a personal note, I won't be here next week because that final touchdown pushed the total over the posted 55, and I lost everything. So I'm going home now to swallow a bottle of barbiturates and have the final bath of my life. But first, for Danny Wilson and Lynn Swann, I'm Jim Lampley. Thanks so much for being with us.